Welcome to the My Walk, My Way podcast.
They wanted to take away my darkness,
but that will take away my light.
They wanted to take away my darkness,
but I've learned to make it mine. I learned to love it over time.
I've learned to make my shadow shine.
I hope you're enjoying the My Walk, My Way podcast. If you are, make sure that you subscribe so you always know when a new episode is coming out, and leave us a review. It helps other people to find out about the podcast. If you'd like to keep the conversation going, please join us on our Facebook page, the My Walk, My Way community, where we talk more about the authors, about their endotypes, and about their stories. That's also where you can ask questions about your endotype. If you don't know yet what your endotype is, go to the My Walk, My Way website. Both links are in the show notes below. And take the simple 5-question assessment to find out what your endotype is, which author you're most like, and download the free resource guide that helps you understand more about how you work. It helps you start to move through fear so that you can do your walk your way. And if you're part of a book club, we invite you to make My Walk, My Way part of the books you consider this year. And we have included a book club guide on our website. Today in the podcast, you get to listen. Really, that's how this is going to work today. You get to listen to me having a conversation with my very good friend, Angela Witzak. I have known Angela for over 10 years now. Last year was our 10-year friendiversary. And she is, you know, like if you have the book, My Walk, My Way, my name's on the front, her name's on the front. The first episode of this podcast was with Angela talking about the book. And today we're going to dive into her story that she wrote in the book a little bit deeper. We're going to talk about her endotype. Angela is the angry thyroid manifester. So we will talk about qualities having to do with the manifester. I'm glad that you're joining us so that you know a little bit more about her. She is a fundraising consultant and coach. She has really taken on this badge of being a causepreneur, offering other people a hand up so that they might change the world for better. She is a mom to 8, husband to 1, and her personal mission, which she talks about in this episode of the podcast, is to love God and love others. I hope you enjoy listening in as Angela and I have one of our chats. Well, it's us again. Welcome to this podcast, Angela Witzak.
Hey.
Yeah. So the first podcast of this series was us yeah. Talking about the book and talking about our authors and the project that we had worked on. And the last one of this series will be with us again.
Well, hey, here we are.
It seemed pretty fitting. So we had an idea a little over a year ago.
Yeah, kind of right about this time a year ago. Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was, we could write a book. Like, hey, we could get together some people. And so we did the thing. Congratulations.
We sure did. Yeah, we did the thing. And it has become such a beautiful, amazing thing. It's hard to believe that it's been out for, gosh, almost 6 months. Not quite, yeah. But gosh, it feels like that was a lifetime ago already that this book has been out and changing and impacting the lives of others, which is so incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I get messages on the regular through Facebook and through emails and things from people like, oh my word, this story, that story. Thank you for sharing this story and pulling this together. So it is absolutely out there doing what we wanted it to do, which is giving people that permission to do things their own way, and really live their own life in full endotype disclosure, right? You and I are very similar on the endotype chart. So you're the manifester and I'm the interpreter. We're kind of like next door neighbors, which is why we've always gotten along so well. And so there's just going to be a lot of agreeableness in this podcast, because we do think so much the same, which is why we were inspired to move in a similar direction with the book, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, next door neighbors, that absolutely seems like a very fitting thing. That's how our relationship is. So I could see that, why that seems that way in the endotype formula too.
Right. Yeah. Next door neighbors that live, you know, 5 miles apart. We just talk on the daily. We're like the old fashioned next door neighbors that used to talk over the fence, except we don't talk over a fence. We talk over Voxer.
Yeah.
So your chapter, let's dive into the chapter just a little bit. You wrote chapter 7, One Starfish at a Time, inspired by the starfish story. So why don't you start us there? Because some of our podcast listeners may not remember the starfish story and kind of its inspiration for you.
Yeah. So the starfish story really is near and dear to my heart. So it starts off that there's this old lady walking on the beach, and up ahead of her, she sees that there is a small girl ahead, and she can't quite figure out what this little girl is doing. And she sees this girl bending down and standing up and bending down and standing up. And then she realizes up ahead further, there is a bunch of starfish on the beach, and they've all washed up. And this woman calls to the old lady, the old lady calls to the girl and says, you know, you're never going to make a difference. There's thousands of starfish. And the little girl ponders it a while and bends down and picks it up and throws it back into the ocean and says, well, I made a difference to that one. And really, that story is kind of the theme of making a difference one at a time. But I like to take that story just a little bit further. And, you know, eventually that little girl does get discouraged. Like, how often do we get discouraged when people speak negativity into our lives that, you know, you're never going to be good enough? Like, you did a lot, but it'll never be enough. And so this little girl leaves the beach, and the old lady thinks she's won, right? Because we always have that person in our life who thinks if they can just tear us apart, then they've won the battle. But a short time later, the old lady who's still on the beach, you know, kind of stuck in her ways, hears this rumbling roar, and over the sand dunes comes back a group of children. And this little girl has like locked arms with all of her friends and has shown them now how they can impact the difference and what a multitude that they have made now, as they have changed the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So all the friends start throwing back the starfishes, all the friends right. start solving the problems. Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. So you said something in there, you had said, we have people in our lives that make us feel, you know, we always have kind of that one person that makes us feel like we can't do enough on our own. Right. This is part of our endotype. Cause here's the thing, not all endotypes have that person. Because not all endotypes have that same craving that you and I have. This is one of those neighborly things that we share. Tell me a little bit more about in your life, how you've struggled with significance and how that's often ended up with a feeling of having to either earn significance or disappointment that you felt like you didn't do enough or important enough things.
Oh, I think that even, you know, doing growth work that I've been doing for over 10 years, I still have those twinges. But I mean, for 30 years of my life, you know, before I really started stepping into personal growth work, I would often come up against situations that would be like, oh, I'm just not good enough. You know, I might have gotten an A-, you know, on my report card at school. And my parents never said a word to me about, oh, why isn't it an A, or it should have been higher, or anything like that. But I internalized that of that could have been better. That could have been better. I have, you know, I have fallen short on some of my fundraising goals where I've raised $40,000, right? But the goal is $50,000. And I'm like, oh, that could have been better, right? Not paying attention to the fact that I've just raised $40,000, but that it could have been better, right? Because we, with my endotype, and I'm sure if you are a manifestor, you feel this way. It's like, there's always one step more that you could have done, that if you just did it, then it would be enough. Even though when you get to that mark, it often is not that mark, because you've just moved the benchmark. You just constantly move the benchmark.
Right. Absolutely. So it's not only just hitting your goals, and when you don't hit your goals, that feels a certain way. But the other thing that I perceive in, especially the manifestors, maybe slightly different than an interpreter, but you guys with the extrovert personality type as well, you guys, and it's something that people say about you personally, right? You're always doing so much. You're doing so many things. And that is a habit of the manifestor. It's partly because of superpower, right? Because you have the ability to juggle a few different things. But can you speak to how in the past you've tried to overcome this feeling or this craving that you have around significance and insignificance with more?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I am the queen of solving all problems for everybody, including my community, because if I didn't do enough, then what does that say about me? And so often I juggle, you know, many, many plates. I've learned enough about me now to know that I can say no to things that are no longer in alignment with who I am. However, there was a time that I was doing many, many things out of guilt, out of shame, I felt like I had to, not because I want to, but because I feel like it might be expected of me, of an unwritten expectation that I created in my own mind, right? Because that's what we do as manifestors. We write expectations because we want people to see us and recognize us, that we are good enough.
So yeah, absolutely. The manifestors always striving for that more, 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 and busy, busy, busy to try and earn significance, when really what the endotype has taught me, also having a significance craving, is that we are born significant, right? We have inherent significance. It's a lot like the inside of a pocket watch, where you take out one of those pieces and things just don't work right. You take out Angela from her community, from her family, from whatever, and it just doesn't, like, things don't work right anymore.
Right.
That's real significance, not something that we earn. And that craving that you and I both have for around significance is more to help guide us towards the saying no. Right. Yeah. So as things come up and it's like, oh, hey, could ya? I could, but no, I'm not going to, because that doesn't help me edify and say yes to my path to significance, which significance doesn't, right? Doesn't necessarily mean standing on stages. Sometimes significance is standing on my deck, enjoying a spring day. Or, you know, for me, paddling around in a kayak, for you, going to the circus.
Yeah.
Right? All of these things.
Yeah. You know, I just had this kind of awareness about myself, about standing on stages, because I often level up and I often do the work on myself. So that means that I'm invested in myself, because I am significant, right? And I'm worth it to continue to grow. I say to grow up myself. And I just had this realization that I was unlike many others in the room who have these big dreams to, like, meet famous people and these famous influencers. And what I was realizing was the people that I wanted to meet, the people that were the influencers to me, that were on my bucket list of meeting, were people like the CEO of my local hospital and, you know, the president of all the organizations here in my community, because I have learned that I can be significant in my own community and I can start in, like, my own little, like, pocket of the world. And I don't have to grow my brand, my business to hundreds of thousands of millions of people it can start with the 12,086 people that live in my community.
Yeah, because we can't logistically, in a very literal sense, we can't all stand on stages.
Correct.
Somebody needs to sit in the audience. Somebody needs to be at the hospital working. Somebody needs to be at the restaurant cooking me some pizza because I like some pizza, right? We all have our own jobs and duties. And that doesn't mean that the guy who's over here cooking me pizza is any more or less than the person standing on the stage.
Correct.
It's just a different kind of life.
Yep.
So you talked about standing on stages and having a realization that that's not your thing. So in the past, that was like a thing you thought you should do, right?
Yeah, I think it was like a natural expression of, you know, I'm an author now, not just with My Walk, My Way, but I published a bestseller before this book. So it's like, this is just the natural next thing, is that you're an author and then you stand on stages and you talk about your book. Now, I know that I want to impact people and I have a story to share. And some of that looks like my Facebook is kind of my own personal journey and my blog. And also I like community in a way that I like 50 people in a room or 100 people in a room. I have no problem even standing on stage for 1,000 people, but that's not my career choice. It's more of a awareness that I want to impact the small so that they might impact others, you know, that I want to gather up my close-knit group and teach them how to go out into their own, you know, their own and figure out how they can impact people.
Yeah. Because with your, so the reason I asked that, and I'm glad you brought up the other book, Life's a Circus, because as a manifester and the other manifestors who are listening, as well as people who want to know about manifestors, right? One of the things manifestors struggle with, and I'd love to know how this was a challenge for you, is feeling unheard or like what you have to say doesn't matter. Or even if you do speak up, feeling invisible. And you can share that in terms of, you know, the work that you've done, but also kind of the journey you've been through that you take us through parts of in the book, in your chapter, like before you kind of have done this work where you can see where to use your voice. But tell us how that's been a struggle for you.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I spent most of my life feeling like I was fighting to have my voice heard. And I often chose not to speak up, you know, which resulted in I had 2 abusive marriages. I really lived a destructive lifestyle before I decided to make a change in my life. It's really one of those things that I let people tell me what I should or should not do, or let them, you know, kind of railroad me. And it made me feel small, or I felt small as a result of it, which then looked like, I protected myself by, I put on a lot of weight. I constantly, went to food whenever I felt like no one was listening. In fact, I was just thinking about this yesterday, that, you know, fights with my previous husband would include me walking out the front door, slamming the front door after being like, you never listen to me, and getting in my car and driving to the McDonald's and eating in my car in secret, and just shoving food in my face. And that was just something that I did to cope instead of stopping and saying, you know, my voice is valuable and what I have to say is important, and that sort of thing. And so really, I've come kind of a long way in using my voice versus not. Now, as for my book, I published my book when I was 39, 40, 40 years old, something in there. Time has escaped me. So a couple of years ago, I published this book. I guess it's a year ago. And it took me so long to write it because I had so much fear around what would people think when they read the words that were in my book, which it's a whole book of my icky bits of my life. And it talks about divorce and it talks about abuse and it talks about my brother's murder and it talks about unforgiveness and shame and loss and all of the things that I felt like made up who I was and how I wasn't sure if I published it, if anyone would even like me. And publishing it was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me because it let go of so much weight that I was carrying, because it was out there and it no longer really mattered to me what people thought because they could read every icky bit they wanted to that I wrote down for them and they could go find out for themselves who I am and what I'm about.
Yeah. Well, and it allowed, because for you, that voice piece connects to your young child, right? And it, and that young child wants to play, it wants to come out, it wants to have fun, it wants to play. So writing, utilizing your voice, telling your life story in conjunction with the circus, which is one of your favorite things, allowed that young child part of you to like come out and play and be seen and be heard and all of the things that it had been craving for so long. And you gave yourself permission to represent, to be who you were.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's something that I think so many of us forget. This young child piece, and you know, my young child piece does love to play. And I mean, my theme for 2022 is play, pray, and slay. I think that playing is so important and having fun is so important. I mean, it's one of the ways that I manifest my amazing life as I play my way through life, because at some point in life, many of us, myself included, bought into this idea that life had to suddenly be hard. You turn 18 years old, you have to have a hard life. Adulting is stupid. Adulting is dumb, right? How many times have we heard this? Adulting is so hard, or I hate adulting. I wish I was a child. Well, what if we just went back to that just a little bit in our lives and played every day and made time for it, made it a priority so we could enjoy our life, which is what, you know, that's the second half of my book. Life is a circus. Enjoy your show. Like, fill your life with joy because you can, because you get to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We can intentionally choose the things that, and sometimes those things, right? For you, play looks very extrovert, very, you know, like go and move and do and adventure. And for other people, play looks like going and sitting on the lake all by themselves,
right?
Or, you know, going and, you know, taking a dreaded yoga class.
Yeah. Good on you. Whoever you dreaded are.
For you. Right. Exactly.
It's not me.
Like, no, it's not me either.
But whoever is yogaing out there, well done you.
Right. I'm good job. You.
Proud of you.
Right. Or go, you know, like go take that jungle trip that you've always wanted to take, whatever it is. But definitely have that play be part of it.
Yeah.
In the book, you drop us into a story about a letter that was sent to you and a couple of letters that you have received. And they were letters that basically where people were telling you who you were, right? You're this, you're that, like unsigned. If you haven't read her chapter yet, go back, reference that. But it really kind of spun you a little bit. And I think because of your hero of your endotype, the hero of your endotype connects to identity and it helps other people feel like they can be just who they're going, who they are. They can right. relate to other people because, hey, you're a little bit like me, like not completely, but hey, we share this common interest or, and it also, your hero wants to level the playing field. There's no difference between the pizza guy and the millionaire, except for they have a different life that they've led. Yep. But whatever connects to our hero part of us in our endotype is also what we've taken that hero's journey on. So it's not always been easy for us. So this identity piece, being yourself, likely has not always been easy for you. Can you share with us how you've trained that hero part of you to learn to be just who you are and that others aren't better than you?
Yeah, well, you know, I've come a long way in liking myself. It's an absolute training. I don't know if that's just for myself or for all manifestors across the board, but I often have to remind myself, I mean, it's written on my bathroom mirror, live like you're loved, right? That's a reminder to myself, that I am loved, and not just by others, not just by God, but by myself, that I love myself first because I am people too. You know, I talk about my purpose in life is to love God and to love people. And then I often say, and I am people too, right? So whatever I'm going to do for everybody else, I need to make sure I'm doing for myself.
Yep.
But it wasn't always that way. And I did struggle with that. I mean, to the point that, you know, the reason that Laura and I met is because I stumbled my way into her gym and I lost 60 pounds in 2011. And I was going through a journey with my previous husband, my husband, and we were basically in the midst of getting a divorce. And then we got divorced after I lost a bunch of weight. And I had a lot of people, you know, that were not happy for me that I was now getting my health under control, but saying negative comments like, you just got hot and you left your husband, you know, what a horrible Christian woman you are, and all of these other things that really kind of shredded my being, you know, and really took me down. And that's those words I fight against and that pathways I fight against. And, you know, I went through my divorce and I started making these shifts in my life. And what I learned from that was that I could be authentically who I was. And so I had to start discovering that. I tried on different clothing that I liked. I tried out many different hairstyles. In fact, every time I get my hair done, it's something different because my hair is an outward expression of who I am. And my clothing is an outward expression of who I am. So when you encounter me, more than likely, I am wearing something bright floral. My hair is probably a bright color. And it's because I like that style. That's who I am. And it offended people. I mean, and it still offends people because I did receive hate mail from the same author twice who ripped me apart and told me, how dare I be the way that I am in many different forms. And what it really did for me was made me start to look at my life and to look at the way that people respond to me physically, you know, with what comes out of my mouth, and did I need to make changes? And what I learned, what I paid attention to the most, was when I encountered someone new, did they ever say anything to me, or did they have a countenance or that sort of thing? And I would tell you that hand over foot, I have people that compliment me on my hair, on the way that I dress, on my personality, on who I am. And it has made me say, this is authentically who I am. And I love that about me. And the more that I am that, the more I can inspire others to be who they are. You know, you don't have to have perfectly natural hair or a perfectly put together outfit or a PhD or a master's degree or $1 million. You can be homeless and you can inspire people, and you can be working three jobs and you can inspire people. You can have $1 billion and you can inspire people. People are just people, and that's all they are. And that's why I love them. And that's what I've learned. That's what I learned about me, is that I am people too.
Yeah. Well, and I think that when you say, you know, you can be this and inspire people and that inspire people, what I'm hearing you say is by being exactly who we are, no more, no less, which is one of my missions, right? That people get to be exactly who they are, no more, no less, that in and of itself is an inspiration to other people.
Absolutely.
That's the inspiration.
You know, and we're called human beings, not human doings, or, you know, whatever the other thing is, right? We are a being, and it is who we are. And, you know, that is not without to say that you can be who you are and you can grow and learn to be a favorite version of yourself. Now, I just heard that said by somebody that it's not the best version of yourself, it's your favorite version of yourself. And so if you can grow into the person that you love and want to be around, you know, because how often have you not wanted to be around yourself, right? Because of a bad attitude, because of the life that you're living, because of your circumstances. If you can grow into a space where you can love to be around yourself and that you can be authentically yourself, that's what needs to happen. That's like the cream of the crop.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So the genius piece of the manifestor endotype is connects with power. And the genius is often a piece that we use like it's breathing, but we exude it upon others. It can be a hard thing for us to like use the genius piece of us onto ourselves. But the word power inside of the endotype formula, it can mean to empower other people, but it also means to allow them to have autonomy, like choice, right? Their life, their choice. And their, your life, your choice, your responsibility and personal responsibility for your choices. So expecting people to take that personal responsibility. How has this shown up for you, and how have you used this in your life as this genius piece of you?
Well, I mean, I do think that everyone has a choice in life, and it's what you do with your life. And for me personally, I choose joy. I choose forgiveness. I choose to live in a space of love. You know, that's not the choice that every single person around me is making on a daily basis, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, even my children have learned this circle of control, right? What is in my bubble, I can control. Everything out there, I cannot control. So I can't control what other people are doing, but I can offer them love. I can offer them peace on my end, and I can choose who I want in my life and who I don't. I think that it's easy to blame everybody else for what happens in your life, and it's a far higher road to take responsibility for your actions. And I've made choices that were very destructive. I mean, even after I started growing, right? Because you only know what you know, and you don't know what you don't know. And so sometimes we make an educated choice based on all of the knowledge and information that we have in front of us. And then something goes wrong or bad, or, you know, has a challenge around it. And we want to blame, you know, ourselves, we want to blame the situation, and we then can make a different choice, right? And it's like, because if I would have had this information, I could have made a different choice, but I didn't have that information. And so it's like, go easy on yourself, have a little grace on yourself. And you now have new information. So you can now make new choices. You can make choices that will move you in a different direction. That's all that I think any of us can do. And when we can look at people that same way, you know, I work closely with the homeless, and I also have people in my life who make more money than I could even imagine having, right? I have both of these kinds of people in my life, and I do not see value in one over the other. Did one make different choices? Absolutely. But I have met people who are homeless, who were there, who lost everything. And did they make different choices? Would they do it again? Maybe. They don't know. And that doesn't negate their value, mm-hmm. just because they made wrong choices versus the other. And I mean, to take that even one step further, which is where I'm sure that you want to hear about, is my brother was murdered. My brother had somebody who made the choice to pick up a gun and get in the car with my brother and shoot him in the back of the head twice. She made a choice as well. And I've chosen to forgive her. It doesn't mean that I've chosen to be her best friend. That doesn't mean that I want to like go have lunch with her. That doesn't even mean that I think that just because I have forgiven her that she shouldn't sit in prison, because forgiveness is not without a consequence. You know, a choice is not without consequence. I still think she should have consequences, and I can choose to forgive her, and she can choose to change her life from this second forward and make it different. She could spend the next 60 years, hopefully in prison, making a different choice. And she could even impact the people that she is in prison with. That's what I believe.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that you brought up control very early on when you were talking about power and how you see power, because that's one of the things that I noticed too. Also having power in, you know, my genius position, it's never really been my my desire to like control the people around me. I get that they have a choice. And I notice with other endotypes who do have power in a different part of themselves, maybe it's a craving part, that that they can become very controlling. And it's not because they are horrible, hideous people. It's because they love other people. They want to keep them safe. So I need to control it all, right? Like right. I can see the bigger plan, but understanding that power is not about control. Power is about taking responsibility for my choice,
right?
And for holding other people responsible for their choice through my choices, not like through punishment necessarily, but through like, yeah, okay, we can't do business together anymore. Or yeah, okay, I don't choose to have you in my life in the same way that I did before, or whatever it is. And that trying to control things. And so then some of the people who are listening are going to be like, ooh, do I control things? One of the ways to evaluate that is how quickly can you let go of other people's bad choices, right? If you are constantly ruminating on, oh, this person who you loved or love currently made this choice that hurt other people, that wasn't good. If you're constantly like, oh, ruminating over and over on it, you might have a problem with power. You may have a problem controlling, because you just can't let go and go, you know, bless you, but we got to move on. And you're kind of stuck in the stuff of it all.
I think, you know, we encounter those people, right? I mean, have you ever encountered the person that like, even 10 years later, they're bringing up the same thing that happened 10 years ago? I mean, I think about this with this letter that I got, right? So I received two pieces of hate mail from the same author. One was 5 years ago, and then one was 1 year ago. So like 4 years span from one to the other, 4 years that somebody is losing some control or some power that they think they must have over me because they waited 4 years. They're holding a grudge for that long of time. If you think about that, that seems absurd to me that there's 4 years of time frame. And that speaks to who their endotype is. Somewhere in there, they've got a power issue, you know, that they have to just let me know. And I'll pray for them. God bless them.
There you go. There you go. Love, bless them and go, let them go. That's excellent. So tell us, what are you up to these days? What are you doing next?
Well, I have stepped full in. I'm still writing kind of on the daily, but you can see my work more on Facebook and in some works that I'm doing. But I am doing full-blown fundraising, consulting, and event coordinating for organizations. I do some consulting for private folks. And then I also right now currently am working on a bigger project for the Prader-Willi Syndrome Association of Wisconsin, which is super exciting. I kind of go back and forth with this starfish difference. So people can hire me to do like a mastermind. Their organization can have me just come in and kind of go through these different steps, the strategy, the team, the big ask, you know, how do you ask people for money? Since the writing of the book, you know, my big goal, even in the book that that's talked about, is that would raise $1 million by 2040. From I think 2017, I made that goal. I think I'm at over, I know I'm over $1 million right now. I'm getting probably closer to 1.5 million. So, I mean, in 5 years, I've raised like 1.5 mil for charities and organizations. And now that's really what my heart is to help others, you know, go into their community and be a light to their community or to their organization, to the people around them, because together we can all make a difference one person at a time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you've mentioned Facebook a few times. Is that the best place for people to find you, or how can they get a hold of you if they want to connect with you?
Yes, they can find me at Facebook, Angela Witzak. They can also get me at angelawitzak.com as a email. So they can, it's real easy to find me.
Perfect. Perfect. And we'll drop that, you know, Witzak sounds easy.
It's not
hard.
But I'm on, but my name is on the front cover of the book. So
yeah, that's true. That's true.
Be as hard.
And we'll drop that into the show notes too. So yeah. If you drop down this podcast in the show notes, you will have Angela's, a direct connect to Angela's Facebook page and her email address. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for doing what you do. A million and a half in a few years for different projects. You're making a difference one starfish at a time. And the inspiration that you can share of helping people look around and just see what's around them. It's not going to be the same for them, right? It's not everybody is going to raise money like Angela does. Cause that's not your job.
Nope.
it's just look around and see where you can make a difference.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's $100, $1,000, $1 million. If you find something, you know, I live by this principle. If you find yourself saying someone ought to do something about that, take a look in the mirror because you're someone. And it's easy if you just make a difference in your own little space, in your own corner of your world, because then if we all make a difference, you know, we can make a difference to all of the starfish on the beach.
Right. Right. And that difference can be, it doesn't have to be a huge problem. You know, it can be, hey, I want to make a better pizza, right? The pizza guy, he's making a difference. He's putting some yummy food in my belly. Thank you very much.
Right.
So, absolutely. Well, thank you for being with us today. And thanks for having fun and, you know, like playing with me. And
absolutely.
And making a book, making a podcast, making all the things.
All the things.
So I hope you enjoyed. I hope you learned a little something about the manifestor. And I hope that you took away some inspiration. You know, I think that a lot of us get stuck on the fact that we have to do a really big thing to change the world. And it's one of the things I love about Angela and even that starfish story that she told. The little girl on the beach picks up one starfish, she tosses it in and said, made a difference for that one. Made a difference for that one. And because she didn't give up, it started to have this ripple effect, right? She gathered her friends together, made a difference for even more. Well, the difference that you make, you can make every day by just showing up, by being present, by being fully who you are. And we talked about that in today's episode. So I hope that's the inspiration that you took from the book itself. And as far as the podcast goes, we have interviewed all of the authors of our podcast at this point, and we're going to take a little break for this session. I would be interested. I mean, if you're still listening at this point, I'd be interested in hearing what you would like to learn more about, how you would like to what more you'd like to hear on this podcast about people doing their walk their way. If we continue this podcast here, what do you want to talk about? So drop me a line, either in via email, info@endotype, or connect with me in the Facebook My Walk My Way community, or drop me a message on Facebook, Laura Holloman. Either way, if you're listening, what do you want to hear more about? But we are going to take a few weeks off here for sure. And then we'll see where we go from here. All right, friends, thanks for being with us. Thanks for taking this journey. And I have really, really enjoyed coming to you and talking to you each week.
Thank you for joining us today on this episode of My Walk My Way. To not miss an episode, please go to wherever you get your podcasts and hit that subscribe button. While you're there, it really helps us out a lot if you leave a review. To pick up a copy of the My Walk My Way book, you can get that wherever books are sold and order that. And on our mywalkmyway.com website, you can find special gifts that help you understand your endotype just a little bit better. I can't go today before I give special thanks to the band Gin, Chocolate, and Bottle Rockets for allowing us to use this beautiful music from their song Shine. Check them out. The rest of their music is great too. Doesn't make my shame.